Nothing can...
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Isn't it true that a baptized person must die... I don't know what the right word I'm looking for here, but in submission to or in union with the valid Roman pontiff.
He must be subject to the Roman pontiff. That's the definition of... But
okay.
The question is, see, that's what Franco doesn't understand, which he thinks he does. What does that mean? It says every human creature must be subject to the Roman pontiff. Every single one. How are infants subject to the Roman pontiff?
You know, I don't know.
Okay, well, see, this is the heart of the matter, because he's going to say that our position's heretical,
okay,
and he doesn't understand the first thing he's talking about. The answer is baptism. That's what we point out. The sacrament of baptism makes you subject to the Roman pontiff, and it's actually one of the biggest proofs against the false idea of baptism of desire, because every human creature must be subject to the Roman pontiff. And the only way to become a subject to the Roman pontiff, according to Session 14, Chapter 2 of the Council of Trent, the only way to become subject to the jurisdiction of the Church is through the sacrament of baptism. Okay, so the defining characteristic of whether you are a subject of the Roman pontiff is whether or not you have received the sacrament of baptism. That's what it means, to be subject to the Roman pontiff. Now, over and above that, it means that you cannot reject union with the chair of Peter. So basically, all baptized infants receive the Catholic faith at baptism and are made subjects of the Roman pontiff. That's a fact. That's a dogmatic teaching of the Church. Now the question is, when do they sever that subjection? See, these foolish schismatics who don't understand these issues or don't think deeply about this say that our position is false when they don't have a clue what they're talking about. They say, well, they're not subject to the Roman pontiff. They're not subject to the Roman pontiff. No, they have already been made subjects of the Roman pontiff by their baptism. The question is, when do they cease to be subjects to the Roman pontiff? So they would have to cite a church teaching that says every baptized child of a heretic loses his subjection to the Roman pontiff as soon as he goes to church with his heretical parents. But does the church teach that? No, it doesn't. The church, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Augustine, they say that you become a heretic or a schismatic when you obstinately reject a church. Okay, because they already have the Catholic faith. They already have subjection to the Roman pontiff. And there's one decree in particular, and I just want to read this, which totally proves that our position on this is correct. And there's so many questions that one could bring up, which demonstrates that their position on the issue is completely and totally illogical. Hold on, let me just get this.
Okay.
Okay.
So hold on one second. Let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
When you say that, I guess the question becomes, if you're saying that every baptized person becomes subject to the Roman pontiff.
Of course. You would have to agree with that.
I guess, yeah, I've got to agree with that.
Because how else, if every human creature has to be subject to the Roman pontiff, how are infants?
Right. If a Protestant child who's baptized and go to heaven, I would have to...
Well, I wouldn't call him Protestant child, because he's not Protestant.
I understand. Thank you for correcting me. A child with Protestant parents that's had a Catholic baptism would go to heaven. I would have to say that they're subject to the Roman pontiff.
Of course.
So
anyone who would deny that is a heretic, because the Council of Trent says that if any infant, okay, who is baptized, is not made a member of the faithful, let him be anathema.
Yeah.
So that's de fide. So the proof is, when does the Church teach that those with heretical parents lose that subjection? Okay?
Okay.
And we can prove it logically. We can prove it from the teaching of the Church. We can prove it from the teaching of Catholic theologians on what constitutes heresy and schism. That is, when they obstinately embrace heresy or schism. Now, here's the key point. What matters of faith do people have to positively know and believe to be Catholic? Do they have to know everything?
No.
Okay, what do they have to know?
Was it the, you're catching me off guard here, but I believe it was the incarnation and the...
Trinity,
thank you.
Right, they're not positively bound to know anything else. Okay, that, in other words, what has been defined as absolutely necessary by a necessity of means for every human creature above reason is the Trinity and the Incarnation. There are no exceptions to not knowing
sure.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
All right. Now, no other teaching of the Church can be rejected without becoming a heretic, but you don't have to have, every person doesn't have to have a positive knowledge of it. That's what the Church has taught. That's what's clear from the Athanasian Creed. That's what's clear from other Holy Office replies. That's what's clear from other teachings of theologians. So it's possible for one to be mistaken in good faith about other matters. One cannot be an obstinate rejecter of any other teaching of the Church, but one can be mistaken about
it. So your scenario kind of makes me think that your position is that a baptized infant who reaches the age of reason, who's now presented with the Catholic faith, can continue to remain Catholic for a short period of time.
Well, see, I would never put it that way, because a baptized infant has the Catholic faith. Okay?
Okay.
A baptized infant who is not presented with more teachings of the Church, or who is simply told, okay, about Jesus Christ and
yeah.
the Trinity, yes, that person can be Catholic for a certain period of time until that person rejects something that's clearly taught in the Bible, something that or rejects the Catholic Church or demonstrates heresy in some other way. Now, it doesn't mean that person will avoid mortal sin. If that person is not taught about prayer, that person is not taught to avoid the occasions of sin, that person is almost certainly going to quickly fall into mortal sin. But the point is that can you say that that person is a heretic? Theologically, that can't be sustained. And here's the quote which really proves the point. This is from Pope Clement VI, Super Quibusdam, September 20, 1351. And to illustrate how blind these schismatics are, like your brother-in-law?
Yeah.
Yeah. He even had the chance to read this, okay? Quote, this is Pope Clement VI to the Armenians. In the first place, we ask you whether the Church of the Armenians, which is obedient to you, believe that all those who in baptism have received the same Catholic faith, okay, so it's illustrating that all who are baptized receive the Catholic faith in baptism, so they have it, and afterwards have withdrawn and will withdraw in the future from the communion of this same Roman Church, which one alone is Catholic, are schismatic and heretical if they remain obstinately separated from the faith of this Roman Church. You see that?
Yeah.
So they become schismatic and heretical, those who have been baptized. We're not talking about people who haven't been baptized. They're all lost, okay, even if they've never heard of anything.
Sure.
We're talking about people who have received the Catholic faith of baptism and who have been made subjects, therefore, of the Roman Pontiff. Through baptism, they become schismatic and heretical. We can see it right here, Pope Clement VI, when they obstinately separate from the faith of the Roman Church. That totally proves that our position is correct. And there's so many, if you logically think about it, it really proves that these schismatics are in a spiritual fog and really have no knowledge of church history. Because if you delve more deeply into the early centuries of the church, okay, there were schismatic patriarchs occupying sees all the time. Okay, like here's what Francis said. He said to me, or wrote to me, that it's heretical to believe that someone could attend an Eastern Schismatic church for any period of time. Let's say you have a baptized family, Eastern Schismatic family who baptizes their infant child,
yeah.
And that child goes with his parents for a certain number of months, whatever, or after the age of reason, or a certain period of time with his parents to the Eastern Schismatic liturgy. He would say that person is a schismatic for being in religious communion with non-Catholics and being out of obedience to the Roman Pontiff. Well, that's clearly ridiculous, okay, because here's the thing he doesn't understand, because he doesn't even know what a dogma is, as I proved in that exchange. there were patriarchs in the early church. Like, you would have different episcopal chairs. The Bishop of Alexandria, okay, would be a Catholic. And then the emperor would implant a heretical Bishop of Alexandria. So therefore, technically, that diocese was non-Catholic because the head of the diocese was a heretic. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So did all the people, at what point did all the people going to Mass in communion with the heretical bishop, and therefore outside of communion, strictly speaking, the churches were therefore outside of communion. They were schismatic. They were the equivalent of the Eastern Orthodox churches today. At what point did all those people at those churches start becoming heretics?
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be the same thing? Like, if you're going to a church during that time that's praying in union with that bishop, it would be like going to the SSPX or to any church that prays in union with anti-Pope Benedict.
Well, this is different because these
if you're going to a spiritual group that's praying in communion with a notorious heretic, I'm going to run out of there like crazy.
Well, you're switching topics now. We're talking right. We can get to that topic. We're talking now about when people become heretics. Okay.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to illustrate the point that if what these people say, if what they say is that the church teaches that if you have a non-Catholic body or a schismatic body, and the baptized child is attending that with his parents, that he is therefore outside the church because he's in religious communion with non-Catholics and not subject to the Roman Pontiff.
The child has reached the age of reason.
Yeah, right, obviously. Okay.
Yeah, I don't see why that's so ridiculous.
It is absolutely, completely ridiculous.
I don't mean to be difficult with you. I just mean to be honest with
well,
you.
Well, then answer this
I guess
question.
I could say the same thing to you, but...
No, you don't even understand the first point of the whole issue. Then answer this. Then at what point do those people become heretics? When the diocese is taken over by a heretic, that's a non-Catholic diocese. It's equivalent to the Eastern Schismatic. Do all of those people attending the church suddenly become non-Catholics?
All of those in spiritual communion or in what was the word? They're let's say, subject to that bishop, that make themselves subject to the heretical bishop. Then yeah, I would say
that. No, I'm not. I'm asking you is that the emperor implants a heretic? Okay, this happened. You had in Alexandria.
Okay.
You had in Alexandria a run of heretical bishops at times, men who were Monophysites. Okay, who totally corrupted the incarnation, the most important dogma of Christianity.
Okay,
when that Monophysite, how many years after his reign? How many months did all those people in those churches, which were in his diocese? When did they become schismatics or non-Catholics?
Well, I mean, my understanding of the church teaching is, and that's all that I'm trying to apply here, is that the moment that they became notorious is the moment that Catholics had to stand up and walk away from them.
No, you're not understanding the issue at all. I'm asking you, okay?
You're saying at what moment... Do these people become schismatic? And I'm saying at the moment that the bishop is notorious and that they remain in union and subject to that notorious heretical bishop. Is that not right?
Okay, so you would say that as soon as he implants this heretic, the entire diocese, everyone in it, becomes non-Catholic. Because he's notoriously implanting this heretic.
Yes.
Okay, so... If he implants, that is absurd. Think about that. That would mean that if he removed the heretic and put a Catholic one, everyone would instantly become Catholic. Or they'd all have to convert again.
Well, I mean, if they held no other heresies, then they would need to...
No, but do you see how dumb that is? That basically they're falling inside and outside the church based on whether the very instant the bishop of their diocese becomes a heretic. What I'm trying to illustrate to you is that it's when they individually recognize the heresy and embrace it. That's the whole point. It's not when they're at a church where they're in religious communion with non-Catholics. That's completely idiotic. That would mean that every time the diocese was taken over by a heretical bishop, that all the people would suddenly fall outside the church. The 10-year-old, who has no clue about the bishop, He would become a non-Catholic.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that...
So you would say that?
Yeah.
You would say that the 10-year-old, let's say you're going to the church in Africa, okay?
Okay.
In the 4th century with your parents. It's a Catholic church. There's a Catholic bishop. But the emperor implants a heretic.
Okay.
And many are aware of his heresies, but not necessarily every family is up on this.
Okay.
Okay, and the 10-year-old is going with his parents.
This is a notorious heretic.
He's a notorious heretic,
okay.
But not everyone knows about it, even a notorious heretic.
They don't need to, sure.
Okay, is that 10-year-old a heretic?
Yes.
He's a heretic for going to the church.
Well, he's a schismatic.
That's ridiculous.
But Peter, and, you know, again...
Well, no, so therefore you would say... Let me just finish my point.
No, because you've been talking the whole time. Let me say something. Because I let you put me on a recorded line, so I just want to make sure I say my piece as well. What does the church teach here? That's all.
I just quoted it for you.
I know, but
I just quoted Pope Clement VI, and you reject that because he says that when they obstinately embrace heresy, but you dismiss that because you're not a Catholic.
But that's not talking about a notorious heretic. You change the subject.
You don't even have a clue what you're talking about. We're talking about there are two issues. Okay, the one issue is whether you should attend the Mass of someone you recognize to be a heretic who professes to be Catholic in this situation. That's a separate issue we can get to. What we're talking about here is the theological question of when the baptized people, at a church which would be deemed schismatic or heretical, become non-Catholic. Okay, and so I just want to return to what you said. You're saying that let's say you have an Alexandrian Africa Catholic Christian church, the people are going there, the emperor implants a Monophysite notorious heretic. All right? So that diocese is now subject to a notorious heretic. Not everyone obviously knows all the ins and outs. You're saying that Johnny Doe and his family, what point do Johnny Doe and his family, they don't even know about this guy, really. They don't really have much knowledge. His 10-year-old son is baptized. He was a Catholic going to a Catholic church. But now he's going to a church which is in union with this Monophysite. Is he immediately, even though he doesn't know about what's going on with the switch of bishops, you say he becomes a heretic?
What I'm saying is that I have the church teaching. I don't have it at my fingertips. I'll email it to you, and I'm sure that you're probably well aware of it. I know that you're very well studied. The church teaching that I have that I can't recite for you at the moment, but I'll email it to you today if you'd like, is telling me that people in union with notorious heretics are outside the church. And so, I mean, how can I deny that, Peter?
The church has never said people in union with notorious heretics. That implies that they agree with the notorious heretic. I agree. If people agree with notorious heretics, they're outside the church. That's a vague statement which means nothing. You have to be much more precise, and there's nothing which says verbatim what you just quoted. But you have to answer my question, which you're not. My question is this. People, you have to focus in here and see these are the things which people like to avoid. They're going to a Catholic church, okay? You have a family, let's say their 10-year-old son, since this is the issue at hand. And then the emperor implants a heretical non-Catholic bishop. But
right.
They don't know about this.
Okay.
Do they instantly, the next Sunday, become non-Catholics because they're attending a non-Catholic church, even though they don't know that the bishop has been switched? It was Catholic last week, but now it's non-Catholic because the bishop has been switched. Do they the next week become non-Catholics?
Yes, they do.
Okay, and let's say he removed the bishop and then put a Catholic bishop in the next week. He would be Catholic again.
You know, I haven't thought about that.
Well, no, this is the heart of the issue.
Reversal. I understand, Peter, and I'm just trying to have a conversation with you.
Well, but see, you're saying that
what saying.
My position is false, and see, you haven't even thought about the very issues at the heart of this matter.
Well,
see, that's mortally sinful.
Okay. I'm just trying to be honest with you here, and I'm not, you know, calling you up today with some sort of an effort to just win a battle here. I'm trying to find the truth and present my argument and see if you can show me clearly that it's wrong. And
well, I just did.
Well, the only way to do that is through showing me the Catholic teaching, and I don't feel like you've done that.
I just quoted for you that Pope Clement VI says that these people, and he's clearly talking about schismatics in the East, okay, who reject the papacy, he says that those who in baptism receive the same Catholic faith and withdraw from the communion of this Roman Church are schismatic and heretical. What? If they go to Mass where the non-Catholic person? No. If they remain obstinately separated from the faith of the Roman Church. That's what he says, obstinacy. Okay, so that's exactly our position, and it's exactly not your position. And that's Pope Clement VI. So you can say he's a heretic too, but I'm just a little bit surprised, and maybe your attachment to these family members right now who are against our stuff is causing you not to really be readily accepting of this information, but you really, if you're honest, it's very simple. Okay? You're saying...
You're quoting, what is it, Pope Clement VI? What are you quoting?
Super qui boostum, okay? And what I'm saying to you is that it's so illogical. It screams out spiritual blindness, your position. That if this kid is... He doesn't know which bishop is in there, and he's going to a Catholic church, okay, so no one could argue he's not Catholic. And then they switch to the bishop, he becomes non-Catholic the next week, he didn't even do anything, he just went to the church, and then they switch the bishop back and he's Catholic again. That is idiotic to the extreme. That is so stupid that, and there's no reason why he would be a heretic. He hasn't denied any dogma. Okay, there's no church teaching that cites that if you're ever present in a church with another schismatic, you therefore become schismatic. There's no church teaching one can cite to prove that. It's completely false. And see, there's actually a church teaching which blows the whole thing out of the water, because St. Joseph, I don't know if you know anything about him.
No, go ahead.
Okay, well see, this is why I directed Francis to this article I wrote about this guy, R.I. I don't know if you read any of his stuff.
I have.
Okay. What do you think of his stuff?
You know, I'm undecided. I've read some of his books, and I think that I think a lot of it's great so far.
A lot of it's great.
I think that he's got an issue with the baptism of desire.
Well, yeah, he doesn't believe in the necessity of baptism. He believes it's not dogmatic. Okay, therefore he holds that it's an opinion whether or not you have to be baptized.
Correct. I think that he's saying that the church would need to clear that up or something like that.
Which is ironic.
I don't agree with that.
Okay, well, do you believe it's dogmatic that you have to be water baptized?
Yes.
So you would think that his position is heretical?
Right.
Here, let me just run off a few facts about him, because obviously a lot of the schismatic positions into which Francis and some of those, maybe yourself, are falling into as a result of this guy, he claimed to be a prophet while admitting he's a heretic. Okay, he's claimed it for years now, while admitting he fell into heresy. Okay, that makes him a false prophet. He claimed to find the witness, the other witness of the apocalypse, in a guy in Mexico. Posted on his website, says, I found the other witness. Abandoned that guy. Not even, probably doesn't even think he's Catholic anymore. Okay, that proves that he's a false prophet. I proved, theologically, that his abjuration form is completely schismatic and heretical. And he changed point 32, it's only one line, you can look at it. It used to be a whole paragraph in which he declared that every single person at every Mass in the country and in the world is basically non-Catholic. Okay, and I said, this is theologically ridiculous. He says, every Mass which recognized, you know, the anti-popes, because if that were true today, then it would have to be true in 1980, in 1975. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. If that's what it said, then yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, what I'm saying to you is, since there are only certain mysteries of faith, okay, you understand how divine revelation ended with the death of the last apostle?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you understand the import of that with regard to these issues we're talking about? What that means is that there's only one revelation, okay? So if someone was saved in the year 255, it's possible to be saved in the exact same way today.
Okay.
Okay? So if someone, let's say you met a guy in Africa, okay, let's go to the year 110, all right, and someone's converting and preaching him the gospel. Okay. Preaches to him Jesus Christ, the fundamental of the Trinity, and he baptizes him, and he dies. Could that person be saved if he doesn't tell him about the primacy of the Roman Pontiff?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the answer is yes, because the Church has never taught that the primacy of the Roman Pontiff is something you have to positively know to be saved. You are subject to the Roman Pontiff by baptism, and you cannot the hierarchy of the church, okay, the Roman pontiff being the head. But you don't have to positively know about that dogma. All right? And if someone's going to say you do, quote it. There's nothing you can quote. And so my point is, if you can be saved in that way today, or excuse me, in the year 110, it's possible to be saved in that way today. Basically, what he said in his abjuration is that it's of necessity for everyone to know that the Vatican II antipopes are antipopes. Do you believe that, or do you believe that someone who hasn't seen the evidence against them could be Catholic?
No, I don't think that you could be Catholic.
Even if you haven't seen his heresies?
Right.
All right, at what point did that become true?
Well, I mean, I think that the heresy is so notorious. I mean, to claim that it's like saying, you know, I just didn't know that Madonna was this demon, you know? I mean, it's kind of like,
so
well,
would you say,
you just didn't open your eyes.
So would you say Father Feeney was a heretic?
Yes.
Okay, well, he doesn't even agree with you. So you would say he's a heretic for thinking that he was a Catholic?
You know, I mean,
see, these are just some of the contradictions in which the nonsense goes. Okay, so you would have to say he's a heretic because he thinks that Feeney was Catholic. So how could Feeney accept Paul VI, who was a notorious heretic? We have a whole video about him. Okay, so you would have to say that, you would have to say from 1965 on, every single person who thought that the Vatican II antipopes were true popes have been schismatics and or heretics.
Yes.
That is ridiculous. That is so ridiculous that it demonstrates that you reject the necessity to be pertinacious. The definition of a heretic is someone who obstinately rejects a Catholic teaching. Okay? You can be confused about certain aspects of Catholic teaching. You can be mistaken about...
I mean,
good.
I guess my point is that you're still outside the church. I mean, you're schismatic if you're in union with an antipope.
No, you're not. St. Vincent Ferrer was in union with an antipope.
Well, I mean...
Was he schismatic? So you reject him too, huh?
Well, I mean, I'm not familiar with what you're talking
about. Well, see, that's why you don't know almost anything about what you're talking about. And you're telling me, nor does Francis, okay? Contrary to what he thinks, that's why when I asked him what a dogma was, or to show me where he said this dogma was, he couldn't even tell me, because he doesn't understand what he's talking about. St. Vincent Ferrer, and see, that's why I said to be deep in church history is to cease to be a radical schismatic. It's to cease to hold these ridiculous positions. St. Vincent Ferrer lived during the Great Western Schism, okay? He was convinced that the Avignon line of the papacy was true. They were antipopes.
Okay.
According to you, he was a heretic.
Well, according to me, he would be a schismatic, right?
Okay. Whatever you want, if you want to call him a schismatic. Okay, according to you, he's a non-Catholic.
Yeah.
There you go. He's a Canaanite saint. He's working miracles at this time.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how I can go around explaining everything. I mean, according to people...
So you're saying a canonized saint of the church.
John Paul is working miracles and Mother Teresa's.
No, this is a canonized saint of the church. Okay, you don't believe in canonizations either, I guess.
Well, I don't believe that they're infallible.
They're definitely infallible.
Peter, how can that be? You just started this conversation, or you didn't start it, but we both agreed that the revelation started with the last apostle.
That's right.
The death of the last apostle. So how can the church now infallibly declare the state of somebody's soul after the...
Very easily. And see, this is the whole point, that this is why I said that, like I told another guy who basically was a Catholic and fell into schism through reading this guy's writings. This is where it's pretty much most of these ridiculous ideas are coming from. This false prophet who claimed to find the other witness, that he doesn't understand that the church, and I'll refute his ridiculous argument, that canonizations cannot be infallible because divine revelation ended with the death of the last apostle. What he doesn't understand is that the church has infallibility in areas outside of divine revelation. The church has infallibility in her ongoing mission. That's why Pope Pius XII says that universal ecclesiastical laws are infallible. Okay? the church itself cannot bind someone to a universal law, which is evil. And that's why that's been condemned. Auctorum Fidei condemns it. Gregory the 16th in Quo Graviora condemns it, that the universal church, that which the Catholic Church binds upon the entire church, even if it isn't directly part of divine revelation, is infallible. Okay, because the church itself, God promised to be with his church. As a Catholic, which I am, I believe that. I believe that the church itself is the pillar and foundation of the truth, as St. Paul says in 1 Timothy 3:15. Okay, so the church's infallibility is not limited to strictly defining what's part of divine revelation. It also pertains to the church's ongoing mission. So that's the answer, and that's why Pope Benedict XIV says that it's basically heresy to deny canonizations.
Well, I mean, but what do you mean by he says basically?
Because it's not part of divine revelation, but related to it. That it's, whether you want to qualify it strictly as heresy or something close to heresy, it's mortally sinful, it's insulting to the church, okay, and it's basically schismatic. That's why St. Alphonsus says the same thing. He says that it's mortally sinful and next door to heresy. Okay, so whether you want to qualify...
Well, I mean, you quote St. Alphonsus, but then in the next breath you got people using him to defend baptism of desire, so I mean...
But there's a big difference, difference between the two.
Okay.
That if I didn't have dogmatic definitions, which prove that you have to be baptized, then sure, then I would be more inclined to rely on
you.
A theologian.
I agree with you.
You don't have any dogmatic definition that says canonizations are not infallible.
Well, I don't need definitions that tell me they're not infallible. I need definitions that tell me that they are infallible. Right? I mean, it's considered fallible until it's declared infallible, right?
No, it's what I'm saying to you is I was responding to your argument that you can't use St. Alphonsus, and I was pointing out how the two are not comparable, the two issues. Because on the baptism
right.
issue, we have dogmatic definitions clearly saying that every man must be baptized. All right. On this issue, we don't have a dogmatic definition that says that that canonizations are not infallible. So it's not comparable to criticize the use of St. Alphonsus in that area. But my point is that canonizations are definitely infallible because when the church binds someone, Pope Pius XII, they're infallible according to Pope Pius XII because Pope Pius XII says that universal ecclesiastical laws, the church is spotless in her sacred laws imposed upon all. Canonization is a law imposed upon the universal church. It's also related to faith. It's definitely infallible. The church, I mean, you talk about giving favor or countenance to heresy. You believe that the Catholic Church and a pope could raise to the altars a heretic and that people could be praying to him. Here's another point,
okay.
Which totally refutes what you're saying. Do you believe that the church's condemnations of heretics are infallible? So, like church infallibly condemned Nestorius at the Council of Ephesus, is that infallible?
I don't know if it would be infallible. I mean, a Catholic would be bound to it, surely.
So you don't know if the church is infallible. Condemnations.
I'm struggling between, from making the leap to saying that certainly a Catholic would need to treat that person, would be bound to treat that person as a heretic, and to.
But the church could be wrong, according to you. It's possible that the church in the Council of Florence, or the Council of Ephesus, or the Council of Chalcedon, in condemning heretics, could be wrong, according to you.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that
well,
I don't
of
know.
Course. If it's not infallible, then it could be wrong.
Sure.
Okay. You're a heretic. The church's definitions, those are definitely infallible. That pertains to the power of the keys. Okay, that the Pope is the supreme judge of the faithful. Boy, I mean, you've really lost the faith.
I mean,
you don't believe the church's infallibility pertains to condemnation of heretics. You don't believe that canonizations are infallible. You've totally fallen outside the church by reading these guys.
Peter, I have, to be honest with you, this is the first time I've ever even thought about if the infallibility reaches to the condemnation of heretics. So,
well,
forgive me for the couple of breaths there that I'm taking. And I don't feel like.
Well, it's hard. It's hard to be
presenting me with
when you hold.
Go ahead.
When you hold that my position is schismatic. See, if you were like undecided, then I would maybe have a little more patience. But see, because you claim to know what you're talking about when you don't, because it's something where you don't understand. But what I'm saying to you is that if you cannot logically appreciate the points that have just been made, let me ask you this.
Okay.
So basically, you would say that every person going to every church in the world is basically a heretic.
I mean, I would say that every person going to every non-Catholic church in the world is of the age of reason is at least schismatic.
Okay. Well, Saint Joseph, let me tell you about him. He was raised in an Eastern schismatic family. Okay. And baptized, and it was only when he became around 18 or 20 that the area in which he lived was reconciled with the chair of Rome. So you would say that he was definitely a schismatic, right? You'd have to.
Right, yeah.
Okay, and you would say that it would be a denial of outside the church and of salvation to say he was not.
I would say based on the information you've given me that, yeah, I mean that's...
Well, no, you'd have to say that based on the position you just enunciated.
Based on both, correct.
Yeah, because you're saying, all right, well, Pope Pius XI said that he was saintly from his youth and that he was basically a member of the church. He was a member of the church from his youth. I can quote it for you. And I this is in the article to which I directed you and Francis in those emails.
Okay.
So, I mean, these facts were made available to anyone who's wanted to look at the truth, but I'll quote this for you. Pope Pius XI, Ecclesiam Dei, November 12, 1923, encyclical on Saint Josephat. Our Saint Josephat was born of schismatic parents, but was validly baptized and received the name of John. From his earliest years, he lived a saintly life. Even as a child, he turned towards communion with the ecumenical, that is, the Catholic Church. Of this church, he always considered himself a member, because of the valid baptism which he had received. Could there be a more striking vindication of our position? Proving that our position is absolutely true. Yours is completely wrong.
Well, I mean, I don't see anywhere. I mean, they're saying he considered himself a member.
He would have been a heretic then. If he always considered himself a member, and he wasn't, according to you, and it's heresy to think that, as you say, then Pope Pius XI also says he's saintly. Okay? That's obvious. Pope Pius XI is clearly indicating that he was a member, and he's saying that Saint Joseph had always considered himself a member because he didn't embrace the schism. Exactly what we said. He was a member from his baptism, and he didn't obstinately become a schismatic. And that totally blows your whole position out of the water. You'd have to say Pius XI and Saint Josephat were heretics, just like you've already...
I wouldn't have to say that. Basically.
Well, see, that's where you show you're a liar. You'd have to say that. He says that Saint Josephat always considered himself a member. So Saint Josephat, you admit, agrees with me.
I would agree that Saint Josephat did always consider himself a member of the church.
Is that heresy? According to you, that's heresy.
No. I mean, you're only a heretic if you're presented with the truth of the church and you deny it, right?
No, you just said...
I mean, you're only a formal...
According to your position, no. According to your position, that they're non-Catholics, whether you want to call them schismatics or heretics, as soon as they attend a church where there are non-Catholics or the leading pastor is a notorious heretic.
Right. As soon as
Now you're switching your whole position. Now you're saying, you just said that you have to be presented with the information to reject it. Now you're embracing my position.
No, that's not true, Peter. You're just not listening to me. We were talking about the difference between heretics and schismatics. You don't have to be presented with jack squat to be a schismatic.
Yes, you do. That's where you further show your ignorance. Yes, you do. Schism.
Why does the church have two different terms, Peter?
Because they're two different acts. One is to reject the hierarchy. One is to either refuse communion with Catholics or the hierarchy. Another is to deny a dogma. Okay, like you're a schismatic. Okay, you're a prime example. You separate from people who hold no heresy. All right, and but you wouldn't. A person wouldn't necessarily be a heretic unless that person denied a dogma. Okay. And so by virtue of separating from communion with a legitimate hierarchy in an obstinate way, or legitimate Catholics, that's different. Okay, and I'll quote St. Alphonse, or St. Thomas Aquinas. You've already denounced St. Vincent Ferrer as a schismatic.
No, now listen.
You did.
Okay, first of all, what we were talking about a brief period in his youth when he was not... part of the Catholic Church, but then he did become.
No, we're talking about Saint. I was talking about Saint Vincent Ferrer.
Okay.
You denounced him as a schismatic.
Okay.
You would agree.
Yeah.
Okay, that's. I mean, any knowledgeable Catholic would laugh at that if it weren't so evil. Okay, Saint Thomas Aquinas. Well, this is a quote where he's talking about a heretic is one who obstinately disbelieves in an article of faith, but if he's not obstinate, he's no longer in heresy but error. But I already quoted to you Pope Clement VI that explains how heresy or schism, they're considered in the same way, that when they obstinately separate from the Roman Church, either in faith or in hierarchy, that's when they become heretics or schismatics. That's the key. But here's the point. Would you agree that if Pope Pius XI says, even as a child, he turned towards communion with the Catholic Church. Of this church, he always considered himself a member. You would agree that St. Joseph had agreed with me that he was a member of the church.
No, I mean, but by that statement, I don't think that offers any credence to what you're saying at all.
You don't think that St. Joseph, do you agree that he always considered himself a Catholic?
I believe that during his youth he considered himself a Catholic. I don't know how he looked upon his youth when he was an adult.
I mean, see, this is where you're like just like the Salvation heretics who see something and try to explain away. Pius XI, can you call someone who's a non-Catholic saintly? Isn't that equivalent to heresy?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm wondering.
So I could call Protestants.
He was a Catholic when he was saying that the actions that he had as a child were saintly. I don't know. I mean, I might not use those words.
So I could, if I called a Protestant saintly or an Eastern Orthodox schismatic saintly, that wouldn't be equivalent to heresy.
The person is currently a Protestant.
Obviously.
Yeah, that would be wrong. I don't know if I would consider that.
Oh boy!
Heresy. I mean, if you call him saint, obviously Peter. But
that's the same thing. You're not saintly unless you live in a manner.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right.
See, this is why you got to be honest. Listen, I hope for your salvation, but I know there's a lot wrapped up in here.
Well,
but you have to be honest because you're not being. You're fighting even on this little point. You see what I'm saying? That shows your dishonesty. You know that to call a non-Catholic saintly is equivalent to heresy.
No, and I just...
But you fought with me tooth and nail on that.
Well, I mean...
How come you didn't just admit that?
I did not fight with you tooth and nail. You've got this thing where it's like, as soon as you say something, people have got to just, like,
If it's blatantly obvious, yeah. Otherwise, they're just liars.
I mean, you know, forgive me for taking 5 minutes to think through it and you know, to ensure that I agree with you.
Well, so you agree that to call a non-Catholic saintly is heretical.
Yes.
Pius XI says that St. Josephat was saintly from his youth. Therefore, you would have to admit that Pius XI was a heretic. There's no way around it. And that's why I say
That's a good point.
Okay, that's why I say that anyone who would see this quote and still say that our position is heretical is an abomination. It's just a liar. It's just of the devil, okay, because it's something where it totally proves that Pope Pius XI, St. Josephat, thought the same thing we did. It all also logically follows to anyone who has any common sense or knowledge of church history. People don't become heretics as soon as they're in a church where the leader is heretical. They have to embrace the heresy. God doesn't cast you into hell for nothing. He doesn't cast you the fires of hell for nothing. That's why the Council of Ephesus says that all heretics draw down on their own heads an inextinguishable flame. The same thing would go for schismatics, because schism leads you equally to damnation. You don't just become a schismatic because somebody else did something. You become a schismatic because you did something. Okay, so you have to obstinately do something. And that's why, like, the people who can embrace this theology, not only does it lead into so many ridiculous contradictions.
But you would say that a Protestant child, I think you use the age of like 13 or 14, you would assume that they were schismatic, even if they did nothing. I guess you would say...
I would presume that. I would presume that because at the age of 14 or so, okay, you have an... And that's why actually the church is, when the church converts someone, okay, that those who make an abjuration of heresy, you don't have to make one if you're below the age of 14. Why is that?
I don't know. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Well, that's covered in our articles, which we, you know, directed you to. But see, like, that's why, like, there's another guy who is following the schismatic RI stuff, and we pointed out to him, we tried to get him to read certain things. He never even read it. That's how blind people are. They don't even want to look at the truth. And the fact of the matter is, we're right, because the church's teaching is clear. Okay, all of you guys have fallen into schism. You're all outside the church, because what you've embraced is totally uncharitable, it's totally inconsistent, it's totally not backed up by dogma. And see, you can only assert as dogmatic that which the church has clearly defined, okay, or something that flows logically therefrom.
Okay.
This issue of when these people become heretics has never been dogmatically defined. Okay, it's what has been dogmatically defined is that all heretics are lost. All right, that's definitely, and all non-Catholics. Okay, therefore, the burden of proof, if someone's going to launch an accusation that our position is heretical, okay, show me the dogmatic definition that says that every person, as soon as he hits reason, if his parents are non-Catholic or if he's going with his parents to a church, becomes a heretic. There's no dogmatic definition that states that. On the contrary, I quote you Clement VI, it says that when they obstinately separate, and when we examine Catholic principles, what is a heretic? What is a schismatic? It's someone who obstinately embraces heresy or schism, unless you deny the Trinity or the Incarnation. Those are the two essential mysteries. You can no excuses for that. But outside of that, obstinacy comes into the picture. And so...
Well, wait. I mean, I'm not... So you're saying that the Church teaches that there has to be the obstinance, but then you inserted an exception for the Trinity and the Incarnation.
Right, because the Church has dogmatically defined that there are no exceptions to those issues. And that those issues are the only two things in every case.
Even if a person was not obstinate.
Right, because if you don't believe in the Trinity and the Incarnation, if you hold something contrary to that, you don't have the Catholic faith. You can't. Okay, but you can have the Catholic faith if you're mistaken on other matters. You can't have the Catholic faith if you're not baptized and you don't believe, don't believe in the Trinity and the Incarnation.
Yeah.
But you can have the Catholic faith, as all these people even admit in their blindness and contradictions.
I mean, my position is that a person at the age of reason must hold the Catholic faith.
What does that mean? You see, that's the whole point. That begs the question. What is it required?
It means that when they go to their Protestant service, and they're, you know, accepting Jesus as their Lord and Savior, and they think they're all going to heaven, it means that they don't have the Catholic faith, do you?
Well, see, that is a pathetic argument. You have to define what does it mean. You have to specifically get into what is it required to hold the Catholic faith. What do you exactly have to know? And where has the Church taught that? You can't just say, well, it seems like this to me. You have to get into what specifically is required to hold the Catholic faith. Do you know when the first term Catholic was used?
No.
Okay. It was used by St. Ignatius of Antioch about the year 110. So what about a person who died before the term Catholic was ever used? in the year 101?
Well, I mean, it's the same rules apply. It doesn't matter what you call it, right?
Was it possible to be saved without knowing the term or word Catholic?
Sure.
Okay, so you admit you can be a Christian without knowing you're a Catholic, but you actually are a Catholic.
Well, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's the same truth.
Okay, right. But what truth do you have to know?
Well, it's the Incarnation, the Trinity, and subjection to the Roman Pontiff.
So you have to know about subjection to the Roman, every person?
Every creature has to be subject to the Roman Pontiff.
But what, does that mean that he has to know about the primacy of the Roman Pontiff?
That means that he must subject himself to the Roman Pontiff.
But what does that mean?
That means that any person,
what if he had
any person in the SSPX or any person Protestant?
No, I'm not getting into that. I'm talking about that guy in year 101. You admit he, as long as he believes in the Trinity of the Incarnation, he may not know he's a Catholic. He may not have heard of the term. You say he has to subject himself to the Roman Pontiff. Well, through baptism, he's made subject. So is he Christian? Is he Catholic or not?
Well, no, I think through the age of reason.
You're not answering my question. It's a simple question. Okay, answer your question.
He's not subject to the Roman Pontiff if he's at the age of reason, and he's not part of the Catholic Church.
That is a completely circular argument. We're getting into.
Well, I mean, what makes you guys so sure that the age of 13 or 14 is appropriate? I mean, is it the abjuration?
You're not making any sense here. What I'm saying to you is, let's go back to 101, OED. You said the guy doesn't have to know the term Catholic.
Right.
He can believe in Jesus and the Trinity and be baptized. Can he be saved? Is that enough to be saved?
Is he subject to the Roman Pontiff?
Yeah, through baptism. You're made subject.
He's age of reason. doesn't know who the Roman Pontiff is.
Right.
I don't think so, Peter. I mean,
where is the church taught that?
The church says that every living creature, like you've quoted,
that the infants know the Roman Pontiff.
What?
See that here's the thing. If you're honest, you can follow this point. You got to follow this point because you're really contradicting yourself.
There's a difference, Peter. I mean,
no, if you're going to apply that rule, your name's Aaron.
Yeah.
Aaron, if you're going to apply that rule, that this is based on Boniface VIII. That's what you're saying, right? This is based on unum sanctum. We declare, define, and pronounce to every human that every human creature, okay, by absolutely it's absolutely necessary for the salvation of every human creature to be subject to the Roman Pontiff.
Right.
That says every human creature. Okay. So what that says applies equally to every human creature. If that means, as you say, that you have to know the Roman Pontiff, that would exclude infants from salvation.
Well, no, I think that it would,
so you would
certainly
agree,
take into account if the person is of reason.
No, it doesn't say that. It says every human creature. It doesn't say of reason.
Well, I mean, Peter, there's plenty of other things in this conversation where you've quoted and it doesn't say that.
No, there aren't, actually.
You use logic to say, just like we were talking about before, there's got to be some logic in there where we're talking about, okay, there's a difference of accountability for a person pre-age of reason and post-age of reason, right?
No, there are different issues which, you know, for which you invoke different dogmatic teachings, okay? That we're discussing what the precise meaning of Boniface VIII's definition is, because that's the one you schismatics continually refer to, and that's the one I'm telling you, you don't understand. Because okay, if you're going to apply that, that means that every human creature must know the Roman Pontiff positively by name or must identify him. That, we know that's not true, because otherwise infants would be excluded from salvation. So that proves my point. Here's my point, and please focus in. That definition proves that subjection to the Roman Pontiff, first and foremost, does not mean knowing him. It means baptism. Okay?
When does the church declare? I don't think I'm familiar with any time the church has declared that. I know that baptism makes you a part of the church, but I mean, where are we drawing the line from baptism to the Roman Pontiff?
That question doesn't make any sense to me. Can you be more specific?
Yeah, I'm just saying, when we know that an infant that's baptized is Catholic. And so we know that the church is also saying that every living creature must be subject to the Roman Pontiff. And so you're drawing the line and you're saying that obviously baptism is the link to subjection to the Roman pontiff.
Right.
And you're saying that you guys are saying that at 14 or 15, we can assume that the whether there's obstinance or not, we can assume through spiritual sloth or whatever that the person is outside of the church. Is that right?
Well, we presume that, okay?
I'm just curious, why do we presume that?
Because that's what the church's practice has been for reconciling people. That, you know, when they convert, it requires abjuration from those people who are around 14. That's the reason. So, because we take into account the church's practice. And so, but my point is this, I've just proven, okay, whether you want to admit it or not, I hope you will see it, that definition does not prove your point against us. It proves our point. Okay, that's why Francis is a schismatic, an evil, wicked schismatic. Okay, because he is citing this definition, and in his blindness, fails to see that doesn't prove his point at all, because if he's going to cite it, that means it would mean that every infant would have to know the Roman pontiff. It doesn't. So what does that prove? That proves that baptism is the defining component, whether one is subject or not. Now, above that, we also know that if you obstinately reject the Roman pontiff or the hierarchy, then you're schismatic as well. So there are two ways for him to become there are two burning issues here. Is he baptized, and has he obstinately separated from the Roman pontiff? Those are the two things. Okay? That's how he becomes schismatic. If he hasn't done those two things, if he believes in the Trinity and the Incarnation, if he has been baptized and hasn't obstinately separated from the Roman pontiff or denied another dogma, he can be Catholic. That's proven by Catholic teaching. So people can say, I don't like that. Well, that's Catholic teaching, and that's also proven by St. Vincent Ferrer. He was following an anti-pope. Was he subject to the Roman pontiff? Yes, he was, because he was baptized. He was a subject of the church, all right? And so he didn't sever that subjection because he thought the guy he was following was the true pope. This whole proves my whole point, and see, like, it proved
good. Did he die in subjection to the false pope?
By the time he died, things had been sorted out.
Okay.
But your position would require you to believe that he was non-Catholic. The whole time he was administering sacraments, he was miraculously converting hundreds of thousands of people, Muslims. In fact, the very point at which he received his vision, that he was the angel of the apocalypse, he was following an anti-pope.
Was that right?
That's right. And so this just shows you that what you're saying is not correct. It's not reasonable. It's not Catholic. It's not consistent. It's wicked. And so what I'm saying to you is that's what happens when people become schismatics through pride. All Catholic balance and reasonability is thrown out the window.
You know, I mean, I will certainly say this, Peter. I mean, you know, whenever I was reading the emails between you and Francis, it seemed clear to me that he had the truth on his side. But when we're having this conversation, obviously you've won the argument.
Well,
so I mean, it's clear to me I need to go back and I need to.
Well, see, if you thought that reading his emails, then you just, well, it's obvious you don't understand these issues at all. Okay, and a lot of people, what I'm saying to you is, I know you know them real well, and see, a lot of people are their view of things is clouded and blurred and messed up by their attachments.
Sure.
And so it's something where you're not as inclined to be ready to admit that this guy's a schismatic. Okay, he told me, you can look at the emails, he told me that if I could prove to him that the Council of Basel's quote was disciplinary, not dogmatic, he would admit he's a schismatic.
Yeah.
I proved it to him. He didn't admit he was a schismatic. I proved it to him that it was a modification of earlier laws. He still didn't admit it. He's a liar. I noticed someone forwarded us some exchanges between R.I., Francis, and some other guy.
Yeah.
In which Francis, R.I. is saying, because none of them agree with each other because their position is all illogical about when things are non-Catholic churches, when people become schismatics. They don't have a clue what they're talking about. And so there were a lot of heretics before Vatican II. You know that?
Right.
Most of the priests in the 40s and 50s were heretics.
Right.
So were those churches non-Catholic churches?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can be a valid pope, like Pope St. Pius X, and be in and have some of your churches under you, non-Catholic. Is that not ridiculous?
Well, I mean, how could he possibly?
Most of the priests believe this.
Most of the what?
Priests believe this in the 30s, 20s. Okay, if you want to go to Pius XI.
Yeah.
Most of the priests believe that. Father Feeney wrote to every bishop in the world in the 50s. Only three came back with positive responses. The Archbishop of Cushing, basically the whole diocese of Boston, was against Feeney. So were they all non-Catholic? Was the Diocese of Boston non-Catholic?
I mean, what specifically are they rejecting?
Well, let me phrase my question a different way.
Okay.
The priests who were against Feeney, which was most of them, who thought that, you know, it's possible for certain non-Catholics to be saved. He was saying, no, it's not. You would agree they're notorious heretics.
Yeah.
So their churches were not Catholic, according to your theology.
They're non-Catholic churches, yeah.
Okay, so you would have to extend this before Vatican II. You'd have to say that a lot of these churches, all kinds of churches cropping up, some of them in the 1800s, some of them in the 1900s, were non-Catholic under the true pope, and therefore that when people would take their child to be baptized there, and that as soon as he would reach the age of reason, he would become non-Catholic. See how stupid that is? I mean, if you can't see that, then you're really in a state of blindness. If you can't see, Catholic sense should take over here. That they're taking their child to a pre-Vatican II church, like Father Dennis Fahey. You ever heard of him?
No.
All right, well, he's covered in our book. He's a famous pre-Vatican II priest, Irish priest. He wrote all kinds of stuff against the Jews, stuff against the New World Order. But he held this salvation heresy, believed Jews could be saved, rejected Christ, put it in one of his books. He was a heretic. But he, in other ways, you'd think he was a totally traditional Catholic. And a lot of these Sede Vacantes even think he was tremendous. Well, he, therefore, I believe he was a heretic, but his church wasn't. But according to your theology, you would have to say he was presiding over a non-Catholic church, and so that everyone who took their child to be baptized by Fahey or...
Well, you would say that a non-Catholic priest would be presiding over a Catholic church?
That's correct. That's correct, and see, that's why our theology is consistent. Yours
but
isn't.
That just seems inconsistent, even with the idea of Sede Vacantes. That obviously a non-Catholic can't be the pope, can't preside over the Catholic Church, and so we would say a non-Catholic...
How is it consistent?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that a non-Catholic person cannot preside over the Catholic Church as pope.
No, he can preside over a Catholic building. Is St. Peter's Basilica a Catholic church or a non-Catholic church?
What? I mean, you're saying is the building, does it belong to the Catholic Church, the building?
Right, that's the whole point. Are these Catholic churches or not?
They're not Catholic churches.
No, St. Peter's Basilica is a Catholic church. That's why it's called the Temple of God. Okay, in 2 Thessalonians 2, when it's talking about the Antichrist will sit in the Temple of God. These are Catholic churches which have been taken over by heretics. They're different from Protestant churches. The Protestant church is a non-Catholic church, clearly. Okay?
Sure. Okay.
There's a difference in notoriety, and this also ties into why we believe you can go to some of these churches, because there's a difference. They're not the same thing as Protestant and Eastern Schismatic churches, that you have heretics, some notorious, some non-notorious heretics, presiding over these churches. And some of the people who go there are Catholic. Depends on what level what they know about, what they believe. Okay, so that's the point, that these churches, like Padre Pio's church, you believe Padre Pio is a false prophet?
I don't know.
Well, you'd have to say he was, because if you believe that all the people at all these churches, he died in 1968, he accepted anti-Pope Paul VI, he only had more miracles than any other saint recorded in history. He had the stigmata. I guess they were either all, see, you would have to say they're all of the devil, that... All the people who were going to his masses were heretics, according to your theology. This is all absurd. And see, this is when you reject the necessity to obstinately deny something to be heretic, it's called pertinacity. Okay? If you can be confused about some aspects of Catholic teaching, including who the Bishop of Rome is.
Yeah.
If you, when you throw that out the window, as schismatics do, like Francis and R.I.,
how can you be confused about who the Bishop of Rome is when the church says that you must be subject to him?
Because I just explained that. Because being subject to the Roman Pontiff by absolute necessity means being baptized and not obstinately separating yourself from the hierarchy.
Yeah. Well, Peter, like I've clearly admitted, you know, obviously I need to go back and read the emails.